Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Welcome to Upfront with Ian Rush and me, Sam Matterface. This is the show that takes you into the world of the number nine, as we find out what it takes to be a top-flight striker.
Oh, there's Rush in there. Rush! Goal!
We'll discuss the career-defining goals, the pressure of being a striker, and the feeling of when the ball hits the back of the net.
And rushes on the far side. Is this three? It is!
You're listening to Upfront with Ian Rush and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. So the Liverpool website, in its page dedicated to Ian Rush, says that all you need to describe this former striker is one word. That word, they say, is goals. Hello to the ultimate goal machine. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
Would it be fair to suggest that you fall into that category of number nines of strikers that lived and breathed, not for assists, not for plaudits, not about being how selfless you were for the team, but for the goals, putting the ball in the net?
I would say no, really. I think for the first year or so, yes. You know, I had a very good conversation with Bob Paisley, and as I played, I think it's about seven games I played for Liverpool, and we'd won most of them. But I hadn't scored. You know, and he dropped me, and he said, "You know, I must get greedy if I want to be in a team regular. I must get greedy," and that's what I done. You know, for the first year or so, all I was doing was hoping to score goals. And in fairness, Kenny Dalglish did help me like that. When I got on the pitch, I was running around like an headless chicken and all that, and. And basically, it was Kenny said, "Listen, you just score goals, and that's it." You know. Then after a year or so, then you go that. Then you say, "Now you need to help me now," and that's how you become a team player. And I done exactly the same when Robbie Fowler got in the side. You know, Robbie was doing exactly the same as me, and I said, "Robbie, you know, your job is just to score goals, because when you come into the side, you, as a striker, you're judged on goals." And I think so. I wouldn't say for the first year, yes, but I would say after that, I become a better sort of team player. And funnily enough, it's quite interesting. A few weeks ago, I was driving along and obviously listened to TalkSport, and I was listening to Danny Murphy. And he played with Michael Owen. He said he was always annoyed if he didn't score. And I was exactly the same. But he said, it was an interesting point. He said, he asked Michael, would you rather win 1-0 and not score, or lose 4-3 and score three? He said, Michael said he'd score the three. No, and for me, I must be different, because I'd rather win 1-0 for the team to win rather than you scored three goals but you still lost the game. And that's the way I look at it. And when you look back at it now, it was every time I scored for Liverpool, it was 7 years the first time that when I scored that we lost.
Yeah, I remember it well. Wasn't it the first time that you lost when you scored was in the League Cup final, wasn't it?
Mulvey. That's a great ball. This is Steve McMahon. O'Leary coming across. His left rush. And Rush, as ever, finds the finish.
Yes, it was Arsenal 2-1. Yes, and no, I scored the first goal. And it's too scrappy. I think Charlie Nick got one or two, maybe, you know. And that was it, really, you know. And, you know, I was more disappointed. Not that I scored. I'm more disappointed that we lost.
You scored an incredible number of goals for Liverpool, 346 in 660 appearances, a club record. Take me back to that moment that they plucked you from Chester City in 1980. Could you have imagined that you were going to score the level of goals that you did?
No, I think when I started at Chester when I was 16, I was just happy to play for Chester, you know, and I never really thought I would, you know, go on to play for Liverpool. I was happy to play for Chester. You know, it was a big move to play for Chester City, so I was happy playing for Chester, and no way in the world did I ever think, you know, I'd go on to play for Liverpool, let alone be the top record goal scorer.
You always wore the number 9 at Liverpool. You wore the number 9 a lot in your career. What did that shirt mean to you?
Well, it meant to me, you know, in them days, I think it's obviously changed in the way the world is and the way football is today, but number 9 was a goal scorer, and that's the way it was, and for me, it was absolutely a privilege, not just to play for Chester number 9, but to wear it for my country and also for Liverpool. It was something, especially for my country in Liverpool, I never even dreamed about.
Did you ever face a fight for it?
No, I didn't really, because really I was happy to play in for any number. I didn't actually want the number 9. I was given it to number 9, so I would have been happy to play number 8, no, number 10, no, and anything. So it was, weirdly enough, when I got the number 9 shirt at Liverpool, David Johnson had it first, and I was, obviously then David Fairclough was in there as well. So, no, to get that number 9 at Liverpool, and it was just that Liverpool gave it to me, I think, to say, as Mark, you've earned it. And I think you have to earn your right to wear that shirt.
When did you know that you wanted to be a striker, a line leader, the forward in the team, the point man right at the top of the formation?
Well, I think obviously when I was young, I scored lots of goals and all that, but I just thought it was just a hobby, to tell you the truth. You know, I was scoring so many goals and everything. But I think it's only when I went to Liverpool, at Chester, you know, you're doing your stuff and all that. But I went to Liverpool as a world record for a teenager in 1980. And then it was, you know, your job then was to have 2 years to get into the side. You know, and I learned that in the first year, I got in the side in the first year, but I learned to be the leader of the line then, because we had so many great coaches, you know, Ronnie Moran, Joe Fagan, you know, Bob Paisley, Roy Evans. They all taught you how to do that without you really even knowing it.
Were you really a boyhood Everton fan?
Yes, I was. I was definitely and funny story, I remember when Gordon Lee was the manager of Everton and he came to watch me playing for Chester. And I'll never forget nothing in the papers on the Monday morning, virtually saying, no, I wasn't good enough to play for Everton. And I was absolutely gutted, to tell you the truth, and all that. So 3 months later, I signed for Liverpool. And in my mind, I said, I'm going to make Everton pay for that.
Now Wheeler. They've picked the pace up now, Liverpool. Now Mulvey. Now Rush. Yes! 1-1.
Let's warm you up with a couple of quick-fire questions and get a sense of who Ian Rush, the forward, is. What's your favourite goal?
That's most, probably the most question people ask me, but I don't have a favourite goal. And that's what I say, when you see the smiles on the faces of the supporters, so I don't really have a favourite goal.
What's the most important goal?
I would say my first goal for Liverpool. No, my first goal, that gave me the confidence to go on and be the goal scorer I was. And I'll never forget it. It was a European Cup game. It was at Anfield. I think we were 6-0 up. So I think Bob Paisley decided I couldn't do any worse, so he shoved me on. You know, and I remember scoring my first goal for Liverpool against the Finnish team, I think Ulu Passarala. And it was a tap-in in the cup end there. So that gave me the confidence to go on and score the many goals as I did.
Who was your favourite strike partner?
Oh, that was only one for me, Kenny Dalglish. He was, for me, the best player Liverpool have ever had.
Dalglish on the far side, playing in for Rush! There's plenty of football to be played indeed, and Liverpool have saved themselves again.
Absolutely amazing player, and you know, I'm so thankful for him, for not just being a striking partner, but also what he'd done to help me when I in my young days.
Who was your childhood hero when you were growing up? Who did you look up to? Who did you go, oh, I want to be that guy?
Well, it was actually an Evertonian. It was Bob Latchford. Well, Bob Latchford was a goal scorer. And I used to go on the Gladys Street and watch him. And he was my hero. And I was actually on the Gladys Street when he scored 30. I think there was a prize for 30 league goals in the late 70s. And I think Bob Latchford scored, they won 6-2 and he scored goals. He got 30 goals. you know, and I said I wanted to do that. And weirdly enough, the next player to score 30 league goals was myself in 1984. So I always added, you know, he was obviously my hero as a kid.
Which manager do you think got the best out of you?
Bob Paisley, without doubt. I thought he was the great man manager. People talk about great managers today. Yes, they were. But I think Bob Paisley's psychology was absolutely unbelievable. But he said it in a very humble way. He didn't say it in a forceful way. He was he knew how to get the best out of players. Man management, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And he was the one that gave me the confidence. You know, remember, I'm the big Iron Bob. When he dropped me, and I asked for a transfer. And he said, "Okay, then you can go on the transfer list." And then he said, "So I played in reserves, and David Johnson got injured. You know, I come on, and I think I scored about 7 goals in about 3 games in the first team." And he brought me in after, and he said, "Right, I'm going to give you that rise you asked for." And I said to him, "Does that mean I'm off the transfer list?" And he actually said, "You're never even on it." You know, and when you look at it like that, is the psychology, what he got was absolutely amazing. And he, for me, without doubt, the best manager I played under.
What was your worst miss?
I've had plenty of them, by the way. So, you know, I had a lot. But one that always stands out for me, and I remember again, we played Manchester United. And I think I scored against most teams, but it was a long time before I scored against Manchester United. Yeah. And I remember getting Robbie Fowler was playing, and you know, and he put on a play for me and I missed, you know, and next time, I remember playing them, I was in exactly the same position and Robbie decided to shoot and he scored, you know, so, but he never forgets, Robbie always brings that, the reason why I say that, because he always brings up every time I see him, he said, "Remember that miss I get later on play for you and you missed," so I'd most probably say one of them.
Which defender was your toughest opponent?
I would say Paul McGrath, and you know, he's one of them, he was absolutely amazing. And I think that's one of the reasons why it took me so long to score against Manchester United. Paul McGrath was, but he was a gentleman as well. You know, you get players who kick you from behind, torture you and all that. Paul never said a word. And at the end of the game, I'll never forget, Paul McGrath keeps on, he always came up to me in the Irish accent and said, "Thank you very much, Mr. Rush." And that bugged me so much after the game, you know, it was absolutely amazing. He was, for me, absolutely quality player. And the other one, I would say, when I was in Italy, Franco Baresi. Weirdly enough, Franco Baresi wasn't quick. And in them days, I was quick and I thought, I can easily get past him. But he read the game so well, you know, I just could not get past him.
Rushes on the far side. Is this 3? It is!
Johnston got to it. Rush! In injury time.
Oh, there's Rush in there. Rush! Goal! Ian Rush! Liverpool back in front.
The cover is arriving, but not quickly enough. Who's there? You've guessed. Ian Rush.
In 1981-82, you scored 30 goals. Then you scored 31 goals, then 47 goals, then 26 goals, then 33, and in 86-87, 40. Did you set yourself targets?
No, I didn't set myself targets. I was every time there, I wanted to better myself. I wanted not just scoring goals, but also as a player, and I kept myself setting targets and all that. And weirdly enough, didn't know until you said that, you know, how many goals I scored. I keep on beating them. The 26 goals I scored, I think I was had a cartilage injury, so I was out for a couple of months. So,
how can you be disappointed about 26?
Yeah, it was just one of them there. But no, I just wanted to better myself all the time. I never set myself targets because it's just one of them things. If you never met them, you'd most probably be disappointed. But I never really set myself. I just wanted to try and better myself all the time as a goal scorer and also as a player.
Did your managers set you targets or tell you what they wanted or expected from you every year?
No. They let me get on with it. And again, I think they knew the personality of myself. I think if they gave me a target and I didn't meet them, I think I'd most probably go, I'd lose my confidence or something like that. But they never gave me a target and all that. They just said, just go out there and do what is best, and that's scoring goals.
That's a useful ball by McMahon to Rush. Well, the pass was a great deal better than the finish, it should be said.
Did you care about missing?
This, for me, what I'm going to say now, this is a secret that, for me, I did not bother me one bit if I missed a goal. And the secret of top strikers and all that is that they're never scared to miss. And it's weird enough, you can miss six open goals, right? And then you score one, everyone forgets about the six you missed. And I think it comes down to mental toughness. I think to be a striker, all the top strikers, I coach Michael Owen and all that, you know, and Michael set the targets and all that with all these different ones. But I think his mental toughness is like mine, where it doesn't matter how many you miss, matters more is about those who score.
What was it like in September 1981 when you scored that first goal? You mentioned it was in the European Cup. You came off the bench. It was in a game which your team were definitely going to win anyway. Did you, I suppose, have no pressure on you because of the match situation that you were thrust into?
No, again, it come down to, I was playing to leave Liverpool Football Club. When I had the argument with Bob Paisley, and I was saying, listen, I scored in the reserves, I scored in goals for fun, and I was playing for myself. And I came on, when I came on there, I said, listen, I'm not going to pass to anyone because I'm not going to be playing for this club much longer. I'm going to move on to someone else. And when I scored the goal, it was a great feeling in the top end. But for me, the feeling was that I'm going to score more goals. The more goals I score, the more chance I'd get to leave the Liverpool Football Club.
Well, you ended that season as the top scorer.
it's amazing because when I scored that goal, we played the League Cup. And in the early rounds, we played both home and away. Mm. And we played Exeter City away. You know, we won 5-0, I scored two. On a Saturday, we played my first league game. We played Leeds United in the league. We won 3-0, I scored two. And we played Exeter City again on a Wednesday. We won 5-0 at Anfield and I scored two again. So really, I scored like seven goals in space of maybe, you know, 10 or 12 days. And, you know, that gave me the confidence. I'm still then. It's only until I went to see Bob Paisley, I was telling you before, that I was still playing to leave Liverpool Football Club.
Did the goal-scoring instinct come naturally to you or did you have to work at it?
I do think it's natural. Again, when I remember Gerard Houllier get me in to be a striker coach and people say, no, it's natural and all that. Yeah, I do think it's natural where I think you're not going to make a £60 million player a £100 million player, but I think you can make a £5 million player into a £10 million player. And that's by giving them the confidence and, again, by giving them the mental toughness in you. And you're only maybe improving about maybe 1% or 2%, but you're making a difference. And I think that's a difference.
The first spell at Liverpool, what was it like to play in that team? Because it was an all-conquering side, a team that had won European Cup after European Cup.
Liverpool are European champions! Alan Kennedy's penalty goal leaves Rome distraught and Merseyside jubilant.
Who was key to your success?
Well, I think obviously the coaching staff are major key, but weirdly enough, like it's only when you don't win things, you look back now and say, what a hell of a side that was and all that. I think it's the dressing room, the banter in the dressing room and everyone keeping their feet on the ground. And playing-wise, I think, you know, Kenny Dalglish, you know, Graeme Souness, they were all absolutely incredible, but they kept your feet on the ground. But they made you, I think they made us the team that we were.
What was it like going from Dalglish's strike partner to working under him as he was the player manager?
He knew what to do, to tell you the truth. I think, you know, sometimes you still call him Kenny. You know, I think he gave us, you know, you get like 6 months from calling him Kenny to boss and all that. And Kenny could be your mate on the coach going towards a game, and on the Monday he'll be the manager. He was so tough on that, and I thought he adapted to it absolutely amazing. You know, and especially in his first year when we'd done the double, it's absolutely amazing. I remember Paul Walsh was telling to me, I think Kenny came back for the last few games for the double winning season, and he pulled Paul Walsh in, and Walshy was I think he scored about 20 goals in about 24 games, and he had to tell Walshy he wasn't playing. You know, and no one else would put up with that. But what Paul Walsh said, because it's Kenny Dalglish, you know, I was happy to sit today, you know, because Kenny was that good, both as a manager and as a player.
He's played across for Rush. That's another one. And that will make it safe for Liverpool. And that will mean, without any doubt at all now, that the league and cup double will be theirs.
That 85-86 season, really special. You scored 33 goals, but Liverpool were involved in a battle with Everton in the league and then in the FA Cup final as well. What did it mean to be a part of that double winning team?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. But what I would say then, I think Liverpool and Everton, for me, were the best two sides in Europe. Not just in the UK, I think in Europe they were absolutely amazing. But I thought it was an absolutely amazing epic of honor. Like, no, you asked me before when what's your favourite goal? And like I said, I don't have a favourite goal, but I have a favourite game. And my favourite game was that FA Cup final 1986. It was because when I was a kid, I dreamed about scoring the winning goal in the FA Cup final. Now, I used to watch it as a kid, then go in my backyard and pretending I was that one that scored the winning goal in the FA Cup final. No, it'd be on 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 or 6 o'clock at night in them days, the build-up to the FA Cup. You know, and I'd won the league, I'd won the League Cup, I'd won the European Cup, I'd won everything but the FA Cup. And then 1986, you know, my dream came true.
At what point did you think you were invincible? Because I imagine you picked up the PFA Young Player of the Year, the PFA Player of the Year, the Football Writers Player of the Year. As you said, you've won every medal there is to win. You didn't really have an off season, did you? I mean, we mentioned the goal record at this point. You were winning everything. Did you just think, oh, this is going to go on forever, this?
You just took it for granted. And like I said, it's only when you don't win things, you realise, no, what's happening. But I would say that, again, comes down to the coaching staff. I think the coaching staff are brilliant because every time you want something, you know, they're saying, okay, the easiest thing is winning. The hardest thing is winning again and again. You know, and, you know, I think that's mainly down to the dressing room there. There's the senior ones in the dressing room and also the coaching staff, which like I keep saying, Ronnie Moran, you know, Joe Fagan, Roy Evans, you know, the Tom Saunders, John Bennison. These are absolutely amazing to keep your feet on the ground.
Still to come on Up Front with Ian Rush, he explains why his career in Italy didn't quite take off.
I had to learn about, you know, silly little things like going to the bank in Italy, you know, opening your own bank account where they couldn't speak English. So, and it's weighing me down.
You're listening to Up Front with Ian Rush on TalkSport.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Strikers are the kingpin, aren't they? They're the man or the woman who takes all the adulation when the ball hits the back of the net. They wheel away in celebration. They take the applause after scoring an important goal. They get the headlines. Their image is the one that's always on the back pages. Bearing in mind Liverpool was the epicentre of football at that point, with Everton and Liverpool, as you say, the two best teams probably in Europe at that juncture. How did you cope with being in that goldfish bowl, being in that city at that time? Because I can't imagine it was easy to go out and have a pint.
No, I think it was one thing. But I think you have to realise Liverpool's a special city. You know, people are very friendly and all that. And if you're winning trophies, no, it wasn't easy because I most probably I got help because I lived in Wales and I used to come in, it'd take me 45 minutes coming into Liverpool, then I'd go back, and if I had midnight out, I'd either be in Chester or in Wales, really. So, and that's with the lads I went to school with, you know, I think that did help me and all that. So it was pretty easy for myself. But I think in Liverpool, you know, when you've been successful and all, they all want to, you know, say, oh, come out and have a drink and all that. And you know, it's one of them things. Yes, I did do it a few times and all that, but at the end of the day, it wasn't a regular thing for me. So I think it helped me by living in Wales.
Nowadays, when you move to a football club, there's player liaison officers, there's people that make sure that you settle in well and give you every creature comfort that you could possibly hope to have. How did Liverpool settle in a 19-year-old in 1980? Or did you commute right from the very off?
I did commute right from the off and all that, but I think in Liverpool there was no player liaison officer then. It was it was one of them, and yeah, it was either sink or swim, to tell you the truth. No, I think it's one of them. I think you set yourself targets. The coaches help you and all that, you know. But my big get out was when I did finish training, I would go back to Wales, and I would be around my mates I went to school with. So I think that did help me and all that. So. You know, I think it's either sink or swim. And I used to go learn things in Liverpool, then I'd keep them in my head thinking, I'm not going to make that mistake again.
I take it wasn't the hardest thing you had to do, make that move when you were only 19 years of age. I look back to the disasters at Heysel and Hillsborough, and they left an indelible mark on me as a football fan. I imagine for someone who was present at both of those and involved in a football club as intrinsically as you were, that was entwined with those stories, it must have been harrowing. I know you were heavily involved in going to the funerals of many of the victims of the Hillsborough disaster after the event. What sort of mark did it leave on you?
I think everyone's different and all that, but I think so the Heysel and Hillsborough is something that you know, we must never forget. You know, a lot of innocent people died and all that, but no, I think they would have liked to carry on play football. But for me, when you go to the funerals and all that, you realise football is second best. Football is nothing compared to what it's done to the families. And, you know, it leaves a... That's something I'll never forget. And one of them, and we must never forget anyway. But I know we have to move on and everything. But, yeah, they were difficult times.
When did you sort of notice that it had gone from being a loud, raucous crowd to something quite tragic happening that day?
I think there's two different things there. I think the Heysel thing, we didn't know anything. You know, we got to play, the game got delayed and everything, yeah. But we didn't know anything until after the game. It was one of them when we realised then. And looking back now, I don't think the game should have been played.
No.
Because, first of all, it wasn't fit enough to hold the cup final. But I think the Hillsborough was... I was actually on the bench, actually, when Hillsborough. So after about, you know, I think it was, you know, 9-10 minutes, you know. But we could actually, in the dressing room, we knew, there was a big problem, you know. And Kenny just said, listen, you know, stay there, stay in the dressing room now. But all things were people coming through the dressing rooms and everything. And, you know, we knew from then the game was never going to start again. And they knew there was a massive problem going on there. But we didn't know the extent of it. No, until maybe a few hours later.
After your first spell at Liverpool came to an end, you went to Juventus, and it was an odd situation because you were going to Juventus, and then Michel Platini said, "Actually, do you know what? I'm going to stick around for an extra year." As a result of that, you were like, "Well, what am I going to do now?" Because they could only have two foreign players at the time, and they already had Michael Laudrup. So did you come up with the idea of staying at Liverpool for an extra year?
Yes, it was me, because when I negotiated with them and everything, you know, they wanted me to sign and they wanted me to go to Lazio for a year, you know, and I said, well, I'm not going to any other club, you know, if I come, I'm staying at Liverpool, otherwise, you know, I'm going straight to, to Juventus. So I think from that point of view, it was there's only one team. I was never going to go to Lazio. Mm. And so I stayed at Liverpool for another year.
Attenzione Enrico, 43esimo minuto a Torino, Juventus nuovamente in vantaggio. Il gol è stato segnato da Rush con una girata in piena area di rigore.
Why did you choose Juventus?
I chose Juventus because, for me, all the best players in the world were playing in Italy. I think it's equivalent maybe to the Premiership now, when there's absolutely amazing players, Diego Maradona, Ruud Gullit, Michael van Basten, they'd like to Rudy Voller and Lothar Matthäus. I wanted to try and pit my wits against the best in the world. And obviously, they were known as the best defenders in the world, the Italians. So I wanted to go and see what it was like.
What did you learn?
I learned a lot. I think, when I went to Juventus, weirdly enough, I'll never forget the first day training I had at Juventus. Michel Platini was training with us. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "You come to the right club at the wrong time." I said, "Why is that?" Yeah, I said, "Why was that?" He said, "Because I'm retiring." So I thought, I should have realised then, because... But he actually said, we had seven new players when I signed for Juventus, and it took us time to adapt. And for me, it was a learning curve. But I learned how to be a better all-round player, And looking back now, everything's great in hindsight now. But if I was going to Italy now, I would go and say, "My name's Ian Rush. I am the best player in the world." And there's first impressions in Italy. And that's what you got to know. There was a rush of Juventus, the Maradona of Napoli, and everything like that. But I was thinking, if I went to Liverpool in the dressing room and said exactly the same, they'd all look at me, "Well, let's see how good you are." And that was the difference. I think it was the mentality. It took me maybe 5 or 6 months to adapt the mentality of the British player to the Italian mentality.
You didn't say that famous quote, did you? It was like living in a foreign country. I mean, a lot of people reported that were asked what it was like living in Italy, you said it was like living in a foreign country, but you didn't say it, did you? It was somebody else. It was Kenny, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Kenny. Because it goes on so long, sometimes it's easy to say, "Yes, I did." Well, for a fact, I have never actually been quoted as saying that. And it was Kenny in the press conference. Because I was in there at Anfield, we're doing a press conference with Kenny, and as we're going out, one of the journalists says, "Why did you leave Juventus?" And Kenny just said, "It was like playing in a foreign country." And suddenly, as reporters exaggerate, it was one of them to say that, but it was actually Kenny that said it, and it wasn't me. And I can put that on record.
Was it like living in a foreign country?
Basically, it's quite funny because I learned a lot, and I learned people say to me, that you gutted or something, that you went there. No, it was the best thing I ever done, to tell you the truth. Both not financially. People ask me, it was actually financially to secure my family. That was one of the parts, and I wouldn't lie about that. But I also learned about life off the pitch as well as on the pitch, where I've only been in the little village in Flint and Liverpool, where I went to I went to Italy, and I learned a lot off the pitch as well as on the pitch.
When you returned to Liverpool, you had a bit more competition for places, didn't you? John Aldridge had joined. Peter Beardsley was there. Did you thrive on that competition?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was going back because I think the year I was in Italy, Liverpool again had a fantastic season. I think they won the league. They lost to Wimbledon in the FA Cup final, but they had a magnificent team. And what Kenny was so good about then, when I left Liverpool, the way we played, he changed the way of playing. But we bought Beardsley, Aldridge, Barnes. And I think when you look at that season, look how many goals John Aldridge scored at the far post, Edna Min. We decided to play Barnes on the wing, Beardsley in there, Aldridge. And he changed the way of Liverpool playing. So when I came back, we had two ways of playing, that way, or when I was playing a bit the 4-4-2. So I think it was give Kenny a different dimension, but as a manager, I think to pick the right system.
That first season back, it didn't click for you straight back into place, did it?
No, I think again, this is when I come back to in Italy. I didn't even have a player liaison officer in Italy. You're talking about it now. I didn't even have one, so I had to learn about silly little things like going to the bank in Italy, opening your own bank account where they couldn't speak English. So, and it was weighing me down where, I think, it got down. I ended up having chicken pox and I ended up having shingles, there at the end of the season because I was so run down. So, again, I didn't go back pre-season training with Juventus, but a week later they made me go back, so I'd done the pre-season with them. And the reason why I came back was most probably because I think it was, we had three foreign players then, and we had four. I think we had myself, Laudrup, Ruby Barros, and I think Zabarov, the Russian. So one of us had to go. And I think Michael nearly went to PSV Eindhoven, but that broke down. And I think the best one happened was me going back to Liverpool. So when I went back to Liverpool and I started, I knew there was something not right in me. And I said to Kenny, I said, listen, I was playing games, but I knew myself, I was only about maybe 60, 70% fitness and all that. And that's why Kenny then said, listen, no, go on the bench. You might be better off coming off, coming on with maybe 20, 30 minutes to go to get to the end of the season and have a good, I was going to go in to stay on and do my work, pre-season work when everyone was off. But obviously after the Ilves and everything, that changed as well.
Oh, there's Rush in there. Rush! Goal! Ian Rush! Liverpool back in front. And Liverpool have won the FA Cup, the first leg of the double, and perhaps softened the pain that so many of their supporters have been through recently.
What are your memories of that day? Because that was a terrific match.
Yeah, that was an absolutely amazing game. And weirdly enough, before that game, I knew myself I wasn't 100% fit. So Kenny said to me, normally I would send you off. In them days, it used to be a place called Lillishaw. That's when people were injured. They used to go there to get themselves fit. But Kenny was going to send me there. But then he said, listen, it's Everton. No, I want you on the bench. But for me, what I'll never forget when walking out on that there, I can look. Normally, you'd see like a red end and a blue end, Liverpool and Everton, but it was absolutely red, blue, all round the ground, 100,000, and all I can hear was Merseyside, and that was something. I don't think that'll ever happen again because everyone was together, the singing of what went on in the semi-final, and this happened to be Liverpool Everton final, and it was it's absolutely amazing because I was on the bench. I most probably took more in. Because I was on the bench, I wasn't starting the game, and I was looking around saying, I couldn't believe it. Everyone red and blue, everyone together. You're thinking, if I scored, which end do I run to? Because you didn't even know because it was one of them. And it was amazing. And again, the Waldo scores early on. And I think I came on with maybe about 20 minutes ago. And it was a boiling hot day that day as well. I came on for Aldo. And they scored in the last minute, Everton. And you're thinking, what's going on here? And I scored the two goals there, and I'll never forget the first goal I scored in that game. Then meant I became the Merseyside's top goal scorer. I beat Dixie Dean's record that goal. And that was something special for me again. But I think really because extra time, both sets of players were tired, and they most probably came down to my level. And then, because they came down to my level, I managed to score two goals.
That period of extra time was absolutely sensational, and so was what happened next. Straight after that cup final, you had that other epic night at Anfield, the title decider, as it ended up being between yourselves and Arsenal, 1989. How much had the events of the previous 2 months had on the squad, and did it take its toll that night?
I'm not sure it's single, but in between them games, by the way, we played West Ham and we beat West Ham, I think, 4 or 5 nil. And that meant Arsenal had to score two goals to beat us. And looking back now, maybe we have to beat Arsenal to, because it was 2-0, we most probably sat on that 2-0. Because I came in that one, I played against West Ham and I think maybe the Tuesday night, and I think it was a Friday night we played Arsenal. And I remember starting, and I got injured after about 10 or 15 minutes because I could not. I'd done my groin after about 10 or 15 minutes. And obviously, I couldn't physically play all them games because of my fitness. So I was on the bench again, and they scored 1-0, and we still thought we were going to win.
A good ball by Dixon, finding Smith for Thomas, charging through the midfield. Thomas, it's up for grabs now. Thomas, right at the end.
I think if you're an Arsenal supporter, you'll never forget that. That must be something special. How can you go to Anfield and know you're needing two goals to win? And so I don't think it takes its toll. I just think it was we sat on that 2-0. Now Arsenal had to score two goals. I think if we had to beat them 2-0, I think we would have beat them 2-0. And it's all about the psychology again and everything. But you have to give Arsenal that credit.
In 1991, you were heading into your 30s. The manager changed again. Yeah. This time it was the end for Kenny Dalglish and the start of Graeme Souness's run. Mm. Did you feel you had to prove yourself again? Because it was another former teammate who was coming to be the boss.
No, I didn't. I was absolutely made up when Graeme Souness became Liverpool manager because I knew him as a player. You know, he's very similar to Kenny. You know, they were winners, they were leaders, all that. And I was actually made up. And I knew before they were going to put Graeme as manager because he rang me up. And I got asked about Graeme Souness by Peter Robinson and everything. And I said, yeah, I think he'd be the best manager after Kenny and all that. And when Graeme rang me up to say he's going to come as manager, I was absolutely made up.
What was that period like for you personally, though? Because Liverpool, who have been so successful for so many years, I know you had the 92 FA Cup final, but it just felt as if their tight grip on English football had started to loosen then. And that was certainly the case over the subsequent years. What was it like for you personally?
Like I said before, it's only when you're not winning things you realise what's going on. You know, in the 90s, we won the odd cup and that, but we weren't winning the league. And you say, what's going on here? And I think when Graeme took over at Rangers, I think he won the league easily. I'd say he got a lot of English players up there and he won the league pretty easily. And he came down that maybe thinking he can do the same. And I think he changed things too quickly. It's as simple as that, you know. And he said to the younger ones, he said, oh, you're the new kids on the cop and everything. And, he went to the old, these old ones are not good enough. And when they're playing games, the young ones weren't winning. Then he had to go back to the older ones and say, oh, listen, we need you. So I think he lost the young ones and the old ones, you know, by trying things too quickly. What he did have, he had the right ideas. And I would say now, if Graeme Souness was manager of the team now, he'd be right up there with like the Klopp, Guardiola and Mourinho, because I think he knows he's made mistakes, but I think he'd be an absolutely incredible manager if he was to manage anywhere now.
Before you left Liverpool, there was a few more trophies to win and more epic nights. But I want to pick out one in particular.
Barnes. Rush. Barnes. Still John Barnes. Collymore closing in.
What are your recollections of that night?
It was one end because when you look at Newcastle then, they had one hell of a side as well. Mm. You know, Kevin Keegan, Terry McDermott coming back to Anfield as well. You know, that made and everything. And I was on the bench and I came off the bench then. You know, and it was incredible to be part of it and all that. And, I said when Martin Tyler says that famous thing, it was absolutely amazing. But I was just about to have a go at, I think it was Barnsley, because I wanted to pass it to me. He passed it to Collymore, and I think, what are you doing? Well, he scores a goal. I thought, oh, that'll do me. It was absolutely amazing. But he made the right decision. So it was absolutely amazing. And I think that most probably killed off Newcastle's chances of winning the league again.
What was it like after being the man for so long? To have Collymore, to have Fowler come in, and all of a sudden they were the number one choices, and you were sort of backup for them. Did you feel as if you could keep them honest? Did you push them all the way? Were you responsible for educating them? What was your role? How did you see your role at that stage?
Well, when they signed Stan Collymore, you know, I think 8.5 million or something like that. He was, obviously he was going to start, and I was determined to start again. You know, I think I'd looked after Robbie Fowler and everything, you know, and there's competition for places. Only there's three of us, there's only two going to start. Mm. You know, and I think if you look at the first game that season, I'm not sure if we played Leeds United or something, it was myself and Stan Collymore that started. Fowler was on the bench, you know, and all that. And I know Robbie had the way he is. He was more determined. He said, I'm going to get in the side. You know, and eventually he did get in the side. Collymore was always going to play, in my opinion anyway, you know, because they paid that much for him, he's going to play. But myself and Robbie were battling for places, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And I get to stage where, I got injured and Robbie come in, And they, in fairness, they had a great partnership. They'd done really well early on, Stan and Robbie did. And I was there thinking, you know, oh, well done to yourselves. You know, I couldn't complain because they were playing so well. Mm. So you get to the situation where you're thinking, these two are going to be here for the next 5 or 10 years. You know, they're playing really well. I'm not going to get in with them two playing so well. But I still wanted to play football. You know, I'm not going to sit on the bench, earn my money sitting on the bench coming off. I didn't want that. I wouldn't be happy doing that. So I decided, you know, I want to move on.
Now Gary Kelly. A couple of players in the penalty area. Here's Lee Sharp. And Rush. And at long, long last, Ian Rush scores his first goal for Leeds.
You did move on. You went on to Leeds United, then on to Newcastle United. Well, how do you assess those times?
I went to Leeds United. I could have signed for Manchester City and Sunderland. They came in for me. Sheffield United came in for me then as well. But I had a chat with Howard Wilkinson, you know, and had a great chat. And Howard was completely different manager to what Liverpool had. You know, Liverpool was all, no, let's see how good you are. Where Howard was more organised, I think, and he was more of a tactician and all that. And I had a good chat with Howard. And I wanted to go and see how he worked. And the reason I went to Leeds United because I signed a two-year contract and I was said, after 2 years, I want you to be manager of Leeds United and I want to go, I want to retire, I want to go on the board, you know. And that was one of the reasons I signed for Leeds United. Fortunately, you know, as football goes, 3 months later, Howard Wilkinson gets a sack. George Graham comes in, you know, and George says he didn't want me, you know. So I said, okay, you know, what are we going to do? And he ended up, you know, he ended up put me on the right side of midfield. You know, saying, he said, like, if you don't want to play there, you don't have to play. And I said, no, I'll play because I just want to play football. I would have played at right back if he asked me to. And he thought I wasn't going to play. And that made the decision easy for him. But no, I carried on and played and all that. And, you know, at the end of the season, he just said, listen, you best find yourself a club. Because, you know, you're not really wanted at Leeds United. And I said, well, you know, until I get a club, you know, I'm staying there. I've got another year to go and all that. And he had, there's about five of us, that pre-season, he had us training with the kids. You know, I felt it needed a bit more respect, really, because I was 36 years old. Mm. You know, I'd done a lot in the game. I know George has been fantastic in the game himself, you know, and I know, like, good luck to him. But I think he could have helped me a bit more there. Like, for one instance, they just signed Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. And obviously, Jimmy was doing weights. And George asked me at 36 years old to start doing weights. I think, are you serious? You know, I've never done them in my life playing for Liverpool. I'm not going to start now. You know, and obviously, that didn't go down well. But look, I got the chance again to go to Newcastle. So I took it.
You were getting on a bit, and at that time, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, it's not really usual that someone would play until they were nearly 40, and you did. What was the reason for that? Was it because you just loved the game, or you wanted to score more goals, or what was it?
No, it was just because I loved the game and everything. You know, I left Newcastle, I went to be player coach at Wrexham, and I kept getting kicked to hell, you know, all that in that league. You know, people loved kicking me then. I thought, you know, I was always going, instead of going forwards, I was going backwards and all that.
Yeah.
And I realised, no, this wasn't for me. And, you know, I decided when the chance came to go to Australia, and I played for Sydney Olympic out there. And weirdly enough, I scored on my debut. And that's the only time I've ever scored on my debut for anyone, you know. So Sydney Olympic was the first time I scored on my debut, and it was great for me because I'll never forget. People ask me, I played till I was 38 years old, so I can say I played professional level, and I made my debut for Chester in 1979. So I played in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and I finished in 2000. So I can say I played in four decades, and that's something which not many people can say.
At the end of these interviews, we've been doing a quick quiz, the perfect hat trick, seeing how well you know yourself. Are you ready to answer these three quick questions?
I'll try.
The first one, how many goals did you score in Merseyside derbies?
Look at that, rushes through. This could be history here for Ian Rush if he scores. He's hit the post. He might score now, he has. And it's the first hat trick in a Merseyside derby. It's
1935.
25? Correct. 25. Well done. Yeah. At the FA Cup final of 1986, the first ever All Merseyside Cup final, your favourite game. You scored twice, but who scored the first goal of the match?
And Reid now sending Lineker into the path of Gary Lineker. And from
Turner in the lead with Lineker.
The first goal in the game, Gary Lineker. First goal for Liverpool, Ian Rush.
Indeed. The season you were effectively on loan at Liverpool from Juventus before moving there, you scored how many goals for Liverpool in your first 21 games?
21 goals.
21 goals. 21 goals. Brilliant. Fantastic. Listen, thank you very much for the memories and for taking us through your career. That was great. And it was great to relive some of your great moments and learn what it was like to be a striker when you were in your pomp. Thank you very much, Ian Rush.
You're welcome, Sam.
You've been listening to Upfront with Ian Rush on TalkSport. And if you missed any of the show or you just want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the TalkSport Game Day feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.